Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Selective Hearing. I'm your host, Julie DeMar, and this week I am here with coach and author Stacey Berkovitz. Oh my God, I did not butcher that. You guys, you know how I am with names. So, me and Stacey are going to get into her new book, which will be out in just a couple of days. You can pre-order it now. She's going to tell you all about it. And if you don't grab a pre-order, you better grab it on release day. So, Stacey, I love to just open the show by giving each guest the opportunity to just share a little bit about yourself with the audience and let us know exactly what are you doing right now.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Well, hello, everyone. If you listen to Julie, I know you're cool because Julie is cool. So I'm happy to be here. I am currently in lots of things, which I feel like most women can say. We're so not like one-dimensional, right? So I am a mom of four grown kids. I am a grandma and grandma to be as well. I am a coach and author. I am a manager for my full-time job, a talent and development manager. I'm a corporate speaker. That's my side business. I do a lot of wellness presentations. I'm a friend. I'm a Zumba instructor. I'm a cheese addict. I really, if I could pour cheese on everything, life is better, including my bottom. I feel like that's where the cheese goes now, especially now that I'm in my 50s. So I will say I'm a little bit of everything. I am a terrible sleeper, and so I'm sometimes grumpy. And I am a happy person who tries to see. Actually, Julie, I got to share this with you. I was going to
Okay.
say a reference, and then nobody would know what I was talking about, but my daughter is pregnant. One of my daughters is pregnant right now and kind of going through some moodiness. We're going to call it hormones, but I think some of it is just a la naturelle as well. She was out of town for a thing for work. And so I made her a bunch of food so that when she came back, she would just have food that she can graze on or eat or whatever she wanted to do with it in the next few days. And one of the things I made her was like this big pan of lasagna because who doesn't like, okay, unless you have a gluten intolerance, who doesn't like a big pan of lasagna, right? It's just like one of the ultimate comfort foods. And she wanted it. I asked her ahead of time to make sure I was like cooking what she wanted. And so later on, she complained to my other daughter, "I can't believe mom made me a big pan of lasagna. I'm not going to eat all that lasagna. What a waste." And so I'm going to tell you that I am someone who sees the lasagna and not the pan. So I would say I'm trying to be optimistic in how I live my life and grateful. Even though we're not perfect, I'm not perfect in any stretch of the imagination. I would say I'm a grateful person.
Can I tell you something? This is how I know we are meant to be. Because lasagna is my favorite food of all time.
No
It's my
way.
absolutely, it's my favorite dish of all time. And with that being my favorite dish, I have struggled with learning how to make it, with finding the consistency. And my sister has given me the rundown so many times. And I'm just like, I can't figure it out. I can't figure it out. So I just begged my best friend's parents to make it for me.
Because
But
it's so good. Thanks for affirming, Julie. Next time I'll give you the darn big pan of the lasagna. But like, how funny that that is your, because it's delicious. It's delicious. It's lasagna, right?
And
Like, come on.
you can't go wrong with it. Look, if you give that to me, I promise you I'm gonna find a series on Netflix that has 1,000 episodes, and I will sit on my couch and eat it with a smile.
Noted. Noted for the future.
Just putting that out there. If you ever, we are not that far, so please. Okay, everybody, me and Stacy are gonna get into some things because Stacy wrote a book and she put all kinds of things in the book that she wanted to do when she turned 50. And so we're going to talk about this because what is so crazy is Stacy and I had a pre-interview. Then I had a birthday. I didn't share with you when we were talking, but my listeners know when I turned 39, I dubbed 39, 39's Eve. And I was like, we're 2 minutes from 40. I'm knocking on 40. I did this for a year in preparation for what I thought 40 was to be, but I did not. No, that's what I was doing until after I talked to you. And I was
Oh.
like, oh man, yeah, I was like prepping because in my mind, I think I thought 40 was supposed to be something else. And Stacy had a very similar experience, but she wrote about it. So let's get into Naked at 50.
Okay, well, I love the sink, first of all, that because there is something that people feel when they're hitting those decades. And it's not necessarily like you wake up at the age of 40 or 50 or 60 and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so different than I was yesterday. But it's like that number, I feel like it grabs us, like it grabs attention. because there's so much, like, I don't know what it is about that zero ending, but there's so much there that speaks to us about change. The book basically, it came to me when I was knocking on, what did you call your 39 to 40?
It was my 40s Eve.
Okay, when I was in my 50 Eve, is knocking on 50's door, and it was kind of late last year. So I turned 50 this May. So like probably like October, November of last year. I was in Greece in November for 2 weeks. Okay, like my life was okay, but I still was thinking about 50. And that number, and it felt so big and eek. And I had to like sit with it. And I'm single, and I thought about, oh my gosh, the dating apps when you're 50 feels not fun. Because even though you're 49, like 49 is fine, but 50 is not nifty. You know, like that's kind of like the feel you get on it. And so I was really dreading that as a single woman to turn 50. And I have so many blessings in my life. I have amazing friendships. I'm healthy. I have a good job. I have done dreamy things. I've traveled the world. I've been to all 50 states. Like, it's a good stuff. But I thought, like, when I turn 50, okay, what's going to change? How is my life not going to be magical anymore? So I like sat with that for a month or two. And the very beginning of January, I was like, no, I'm going to face this year. Like, I'm going to make this year magic. I'm going to choose intentionally to make this year magical. And so I decided to do 50 things I had never done before during the entire year I was 50. So January till December. That's what inspired the book. But before the book came around, I was just doing it because I wanted to get in the right mindset. And then I shared episodes of it, of what was happening on my podcast. And then about March, I was like, oh, I'm writing about this. And that's when the actual book came.
So 50 things at 50. Before we get into some of those 50 things, because I want to talk about some of the 50 things and I'm sure that the listeners want to hear about it. I want to talk about some things that we went over in our pre-show. And one thing that we kind of just covered was expectations. And so what about entering 50? Like, what expectations did you have at first before you're like, oh, I'm done and I'm just gonna, ride this wave and see where it takes me?
Hello, listeners. Welcome to my body. I am in menopause. So I was like, oh my gosh, does that mean I'm going, like, what other symptoms, new symptoms are going to come about? Am I going to start having, like, and I'm very fit, like, I teach fitness, but I was like, what body pains are going to start? Like I said about the dating app, what's going to happen when they see 50 there? It's just kind of like mortality, like, looms its ugly head, right? A little bit. It's basically the pan of lasagna you're pissed about because you do not want a pan of lasagna. Like, that's what I was focusing on. And then I was like, no, I'm going to focus on the lasagna part. That was the transformation for me.
So let's
Sorry,
talk.
Julie, I'm making you hungry. I know I
The
am.
I just ate. I just shared with you that right before we got on, I was sitting here stuffing my face with last night's leftovers. I was like, I can't sit here in front of the mic with my stomach rumbling, and I've been like in front of the computer all day. But lasagna does sound nice. I'm just gonna put
What's
that
for
out
dinner?
there.
It's what's for dinner now.
It's yeah, I might, and this is the most disrespectful thing I can do, but it satisfies everything about lasagna is I'll go to Meijer and buy the big Stouffer one, which I'm like, it satisfies me and I'm happy. My kids love it because they're really, they're young, they're into bland food. But me, I'm just like, I know that extra love is missing when I get those. But they do, I guess,
Mama
satisfy
Stouffer's didn't make it, right?
it.
Like, it is at its factory made. It's okay. If you need it, it's a good backup for the real thing.
If I'm like, nobody can get it for me, I'll just go get a Stouffer's. But yeah, it's not the same. It's just, I guess it just, what is it? Like it handles that little itch that you have and then you move
Yeah.
on. So I want to talk about some of the 50 things that you accomplished. Which one had the biggest impact on
Okay, well,
your personal growth?
let me say this first. So when I wrote the book, so the first chapter, the not first chapter, the first part is for the reader specifically to ask some questions, a lot of reflection questions on looking back in their life. The second part of the book is all about looking forward, so reflection about how they want to show up in this next decade. And so I felt like that was important instead of just be like, look at me and my 50 experiences. I wanted to make it like the 50 experiences part to be inspirational to like plant ideas. Do any of these resonate? I really wanted the first two parts of the book, just as a coach, as a health coach, and as a person who experienced all this, to really be something that people can take action in their own life when they're turning that number, when they're turning that decade. Doesn't have to be 50, Julie, in your place, it could be 40 or somebody turning 60, but it's really how do they want to show up in this next decade? Having said that, what was your question about the 50 you wanted me to?
I just wanted to know which one had the, do you feel had the biggest impact on your personal growth and why?
Ooh, such a good question. I would say, first of all, I didn't want any of them to have, or all of them. I didn't jump out of a plane. So let me say that. I know people were like, you must be just like, I am not jumping out of a plane. That does not bring me joy. That brings me horror. And that's not a good thing. So, but I didn't, they didn't have to be that like huge, you know, like I climbed Mount Everest or I jumped out of a plane. I wanted there to be some bigger ones, but then I also wanted there to be some smaller ones because for our brain to continue developing and to not age, we need to constantly be giving it new ideas. And we can't always afford a trip somewhere, you know, to Mount Everest. So we need to create those new ideas with what's in our realm that we could do so. So I would say for a big thing, something that was really changed me, not it changed me, but it really impacted me. It was a very impactful experience, is I walked part of the Camino de Santiago in Spain. For those who aren't familiar with, this is a pilgrimage, an ancient pilgrimage where people for religious reasons would walk either from France or Portugal to Spain, to the northern part of Spain in this town called Santiago de Compostela. It's the pilgrimage of James. For many centuries, it's like was the spiritual act. And now people do it. Some people do it for the spiritual act. Some people do it because they're having a change in their life. They got married, they got divorced, they graduated college, they lost their job, and they're just trying to redefine their whatever it is. They overcame it cancer, and this is like their celebration. So I met someone whose wife had taken her life, and this was him trying to regroup for his own life. So everyone does it differently. Now, in order on this Camino to like be a graduate, to get the certificate, you have to go at least 100 kilometers over a series of days. But the whole Camino is like, I want to say 800 kilometers, 500 miles. So it's like 46 days of long walking. I did not do that. I didn't have 46 days to do that. But I did do 119 kilometers. So I graduated. It was very impactful. This was like my longest, annoyingly long chapter or experience in the book because I tried to shorten it and I did so many times, but it like took the power of the experience away. So it's still a little longer than the others. Can I share real quick what happened in this?
Of
Because
course.
it why it was impactful. So interesting because I teach fitness. I always hike when I travel. I actually find places to hike when I travel. It's very meaningful to me. It's almost like part of my travels to find a hike. I went in for a job interview. When I went in for the job interview, the lady didn't show up. The HR person didn't show up. So I got all, you know, spiffy whiffy. She didn't show up and she called. She's like, I'm so sorry. The big HR department was supposed to call you and reschedule this. I had, you know, something happen in my family. I'm like, no problem. So she could not reschedule this meeting for 2 weeks. And I thought, well, if I get this job, I'm never going to be able to do a Camino. I had been doing my own thing, my own business, so I had flexibility in my schedule. And I thought, I'm going to go do a Camino. So when you do a Camino, you should train, right? You should train because you're going to be walking. You are a fitness person, Julie, so I know you know what I'm saying. Like, you should train. You would not run a marathon tomorrow if you had never trained, right? But I'm like, it's walking. Like a week and a half later, I'm in Spain and it's the first day. And I wake up, of course, at 3 a.m. because like I'm so off with the time with jet lag. And I was like, okay, I need to like focus this Camino on into something. And I decided, I like on my Facebook, I was like, I'm walking this Camino. Is there anybody I can pray for on this Camino? And you know, I got probably 60 people that responded, maybe more. Can you pray for this? So I wrote down at 3 o'clock in the morning in Spain, everyone I was praying for. And I was like, I'm going to use that as my strength on any of the days that feel hard. So I'm in Spain. I take the train to where I need to start, which I actually started in Santiago de Compostela. So I went a little bit of an opposite way. And it was pouring rain, like pouring rain. So I'm thinking about those people on the list. I'm walking. It's a 22-mile day, right? This is the longest day by far. And Stacy thinks, no problem. I teach Zumba. I taught Tabata 2 days ago. Bring on the 22 miles. Like, no biggie. So, like, halfway through the walk, all of a sudden, I'm like, it's interesting. My knees are feeling a little funny. And then I'm walking and walking. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I'm having a hard time, like, moving my legs to walk. So, I'm about 17, 18 miles in at this point, and I'm in excruciating pain. Like, I'm just in excruciating pain. And I go into this bar to get something to eat and to literally just sit down. And This guy at the bar looks at me and I speak Spanish, but so he says to me, "Your face is white." Like I was in so much pain, my face had turned white. And I sat down and I was like, oh my gosh. And I'd seen this little group of people that were walking together and they came into the same bar. And I said to them, they're like, "We're so surprised to see you here. We saw you in so much pain." And I said, "Can I get a ride to the next, like to get me closer to my where I'm staying?" Because one of them had a car. He was like following his girlfriend. That would just help. Like, can you get me there a little closer? And he did. He did. And I found right where he dropped me off, I found like a wooden stick to help move me. And then I got maybe a mile and a half. I almost felt like I was going to need to crawl. Like, this is where we're at. And I saw this group of guys walking the Camino and they're like, "Are you okay?" And I explained to them what was happening. And one of them said, "Here's an ibuprofen. This is a payment. Like, take it when you're in your hotel, but so you can." I said, "Great." And then he goes, "F it." And he throws his backpack down and he goes, "Get on my back." And he put me on his back. It almost like brings tears to my eyes every time I think about it. Like, he got me to my where I was staying. I mean, I literally would have been crawling. And there is this saying that's on the Camino, and it's, "The Camino will provide. Whatever you need, the Camino will provide." And I was thinking, like all my other adventures of travel, I'm gonna like see great vistas and, you know, it's gonna be fun. I'm gonna meet a lot of people. It's gonna be, and the Camino, I was like, the Camino is providing me really painful knees, you know, like, but then that was the big, too big of lasagna. And then I saw like, oh my gosh, this guy took me to where I needed to be. And this other guy put me on his back and carried me. The next day, pouring rain again. And I woke up, I had done everything, like massage my legs. I had these like TENS unit that sent these things into that I had packed and brought with me. Like, I'm trying everything, putting this cream on, just trying. So I leave, it's still raining the next day. And it's another long day. And I am literally dragging my body like through sticks I can find. And it's pouring. I'm holding an umbrella. I mean, it was just, you know, everything that you don't think you're going to experience, right? And then it happened again. Like, one person gave me an ibuprofen. One person's like, "I have some knee cream." You know, I'd see these people on the way and they'd be passing me by the dozens. But then I found these two women from Spain and we talked. And one of them said, "Take my walking stick," like a real walking stick, not like the one she found, you know, on the ground. And so her walking pole. And so she gave me one of her walking poles to use. And it was just so beautiful. And I was like, I have to get some help for tomorrow is Easter. I have to get some help for my knees. So I needed to find a pharmacy. But like these little towns, like we're in the middle of nowhere. And so I got to a little town. I'm like, is there a pharmacy anywhere close in the vicinity? And they're like, yes, there's one 30 minutes away by car, but they close in like 20 minutes. And so I called a taxi. The taxi came. She said, "It's going to be closed by the time that we get there." She called the store. The store said, "We will reopen just for you." So it was just things happen. Like, I mean, how often would CVS say to us, "No problem, we'll
We'll
reopen to
stay
give you"?
open. Yeah.
And so that happened. And then the last day that was so impactful for me was the next day. It was Easter Sunday. It was a time change day. And I woke up 4 o'clock in the morning and I couldn't go back to sleep and still in pain. So I packed all my stuff. I just decided to start walking at 4:30 and I had my umbrella because of course it was raining and my walking sticks and I had my gloves and it was pitch black. So I'd like tucked in my phone and my shirt so the flashlight could show. And I'm walking and I'm like, I'm starting to get frustrated because I'm in so much pain. I'm like mad at my knees. I'm like, this is not the experience. I mean, I'm so touched by everyone, but I'm also like, why am I hurting so bad? And I start praying. And I have not been, quote, I believe in God, but I haven't been religious in a long time. Here we are on Easter Sunday. And I said, "Jesus, heal me." Like, I was like, where did that come from? It just came. I'm not religious. Okay. I do need to quote, like, this was not a normal thing to come out of my mouth. And I literally said it. And I could walk for a few minutes and then the pain came back. So that whole day, I kept saying those words. Was I in pain? Yes, but it would come and go and come and go. Jesus, heal me. Jesus, heal me. And then I got to, at this point, I've been walking 10 hours. It starts pouring again. And there's this couple who came up to look at like a statue from a car and kind of in the middle of nowhere. And I was like, "Can you take me to the village of C where I was going?" This is all in Spanish. And they were like, "Sure." And so took me to the village of C where I was staying in a little apartment. And they dropped me off at the top of the steps. So there's just like a gazillion steps to go down to get to this apartment. And I hear my name in Spanish. She was like, "Are you Stacy?" And I said, "Yeah, how did you know?" And she's like, "You know, I was waiting for you. It's Easter, everything's closed. I'm going to get you dinner from my mom's house." And so she came and brought me dinner. And she goes, "What happened to your knees?" And I told her what happened. She goes, "You know, we're right across the little way from a hotel and they have a masseuse there sometimes. Let me see if the masseuse is there." They call masseuse. She's not there, but they said, "Here's her number. Call her." It's Easter Sunday. If you've ever been in Spain, everything shuts down on Sundays and it's Easter Sunday, right? Like extra. But we call her anyway. And she says, "I will be at the apartment in 45 minutes." So she came. She gave me this massage on my legs and I woke up the next day and I could walk. So
Okay.
sometimes we, especially if you're religious, God's not going to show up on your doorstep. It's going to be through other people. But it was such a humbling experience for me. It was so humbling because I thought, I'm so fit. This is what I do for a living. And yet I couldn't walk. And the Camino gave me what I needed. It gave me people. It gave me humility. It gave me healing. It gave me connection to God. And so it became this really, really impactful experience in my life. Definitely, definitely one of the most impactful of all 50, for sure.
I love that you shared that with us. That was a great story. That is kind of what I hope to start here, or what I when I started all this after the trauma dumps that we talked about. I love that you shared that because it just reinforces when we make the choice as people to come together and be mindful and be kind and to be considerate and to just extend our hand, like how powerful that is, how truly inspiring and impactful that is. Someone say, get on my back, girl. That literally added so much value to your life and to this experience that you're still moved to tears. That is the kind of ripple effect that we need in this world, you know? Like, we need that. The world would be so better, so much better if we can all just get there. And it's so possible.
If we could all say, "Get on my back," like if
Yeah.
we could treat each other like that, yeah, for sure.
Say, I see it's a little hard for you today. Come on, get on my back.
Yeah.
That's really all it takes. I've had this conversation like briefly before about how helping people and, you know, affecting change doesn't have to be this giant magic trick. It is literally that something so simple as asking someone, how are you doing? Or giving someone an ibuprofen, or, you know, saying, hey, I know they're gonna close, girl, but let me call them. And let me call them. And then the other person on the other end, knowing, like, gosh, I can go home, watch TV, do whatever I want, but somebody needs help right now. Yeah, I'll stay open for you. Just taking a pause and doing things like that literally contributes to greatness in the world. So thank you for sharing that.
Drop. Yeah, no, thank you. Thanks for giving me the space, Julie.
Oh my gosh, everybody, I knew me and Stacy were going to have a good time. See? I'm going to get into something that Stacy's told me about herself, and I want to get the definition. And then after I get the definition, I want to ask you a question. So
Okay.
you are a self-proclaimed development addict. Did I get it right?
Yeah,
All
you got it right. Yep.
right, let's define that. Let's get into it.
Okay, yeah. So a development addict is somebody who constantly wants to learn and grow and really just evolve into their best self. Short answer for that one.
Okay, I'll take that. You help people all over the place. How does your work as a health and wellness coach tie into you being a development addict? And how does that message come across in your book?
Okay, yeah. So I think it's just like what you're doing for me, Julie. It's giving people space to think their thoughts through their thoughts. I think that's as any coach, a good coach does, is they give people space. And so when I tie that into development, it's giving them the space to talk through what they want to develop, who they want to be, what's the legacy they want to live. Is it small goals like I want to run my first 5K? Is it big goals like I want to get my financial life where it needs to be? And no, I'm not a financial coach, so keep looking if that's what you're looking for. But it's developing, right? And so that is where the first two parts of the book came in because we can't change what we're not aware of. And so the first part of the book is awareness. Like, look back. Who's in your life? What has gone well? What are things that were tough for you? It's just creating awareness within themselves. Within ourselves. And then the second part of the book is the development part. Okay, where are we going together? Where are we going together on this? Like, here are some questions. Reflect back to me. What is important for you to move forward? And then the last part of the book is my own development, right? It's all the things I decided to do to grow and learn and develop and laugh at and go, oh, I wouldn't do that one again. Or, oh, yeah, that was amazing. So, development. Yep. A little bit addicted.
I love that. So, everyone, it wouldn't be a great episode of Selective Hearing if I didn't take a turn down mommy way. Or I call it outside, like I live on mommy way. We take turns down mommy avenue because I am a boy mom and I often talk about them on the show. But I'm going to talk about
How old are your
Stacy.
boys, Julie? How old are your boys?
They are 3 and 6, but my 3-year-old will be 4 in January. So we're coming up on a fun holiday season with him. But yes, I live with two kids that are actively auditioning for Monday Night Raw. Like, it is wild over here. I'm like, everything is just like loud and like ready, set, go. And then they crash and they go to sleep. And I'm like, so there's no downtime with them. They just, it's like, go, 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 sleep. And I'm like, all right.
Boys are so different than I have two of each, right? And they're so different. Like when my boys became teenagers during that time, I remember thinking, I can't believe as a teenage girl, I put so much of my self-esteem and self-worth into the acceptance of teenage boys. Because once you have teenage boys, you're like, they're a mess. And so, like, how did I put my self-esteem and approval on them? Oh, perspective as a mom.
Oh my gosh, I want to say that that moment hasn't come for me, but okay, my 6-year-old is in first grade. Like, let's talk about this, guys, because like I'm working this out, and this is only about 8 days old, so this is hot off the press, everybody. My 6-year-old comes out of school, and his best friend runs up with him and is like, Miss Julie, and I'm like, yeah, what's going on? And it's like, Elijah gave, this girl some flowers, and when he gave her the flowers, I said, you should give her a kiss. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, wait, huh? Stop. We're doing what? And you recommended what? And I'm like, it was very kind of you to give her flowers. And I was like, and no, we don't have to give her a kiss. The flowers were a nice enough gesture. So his friend's like, oh, okay. Well, I thought that's what you do when you have a crush on a girl, and he runs away. So now I get in the car clutching my pearls, and I'm like, girl, hold it together. Hold it together. Because
Clutching my pearls.
what do you mean a crush? How did we get here? Because I live in Minecraft Nation. So what, are there girls in Minecraft who told you this? So he gets in the car. I'm like, okay, so you gave her flowers. And he was like, yes. And I was like, what made you want to give her flowers today? And I was like, did she do anything? And he was like, well, we get along really well. And I was like, oh, that's nice. She's your friend and you guys get along re really well. And I was like, it's very important for friends to get along. And I was like, so I'm glad you guys do. And he's like, and I see dad give you flowers. And I was like, I like when dad gives me flowers. And he was like, says her name. She liked the flowers too. So I was like, yeah, well, your friend mentioned you have a crush on her, do you? And he turns red all around the ears. He's in the back seat. I can tell his face is hot. And I'm like, oh, stay calm, girl. What do you, oh no. What is happening? And he goes, I'd rather not talk about that right now. So I'm like,
Look at him throwing up some boundaries with moms.
so yeah, now I gotta mind my business, right? But I can't because he's 6.
So did he go anywhere after that?
No, I let it ride until we got home. And then after he got done playing his game, I revisited the subject. And he did say that he has a crush on her. And he does know what a crush means because he let me know, remember, I used to have a crush on Elsa. That is the character from Frozen. So I was like, okay. All right. So we know what crushes are. And then I had to tell him, like, you guys will probably be good friends for a very long time. And I was like, and just hold on to that and really cherish that. But you guys don't have to worry about having crushes on each other right now. And I was like, but it is okay to give your friends flowers, especially when they mean a lot to you. But oh my goodness. Yeah. After that, I needed a nap, a whole nap.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, I get like he has some like, and this is probably attributed to you, Julie, but it sounds like he has some like good self-awareness. Well, it's just like Elsa, my time with Elsa, the relationship I had with her, the feeling she brought out of me.
Sometimes, because my kids have been on this journey with me, okay? Because I was a hot mess when I became a mom. So They're just on this roller coaster with me. And sometimes when they talk to me or when we're having conversations and the way that they respond, I'm amazed, but then I'm also like, what am I doing? Like, who are these little guys, these little mature guys, but you're still six because like you're gonna go in a corner and eat boogers after this conversation. But it's still like, yeah.
Thank you for that visual, actually. I just want to thank you for the booger eating visual you created in my life.
You are welcome. So we're going to talk about your we're going to turn down your street in motherhood, and I want to talk about you have four children, and you talked about now you're becoming a grandmother of your second grandchild, and you share with me in the pre-show that you're an adoptive mother, which I think is absolutely amazing. How has your journey with your family and motherhood and grandmotherhood, how has that influenced your perspective?
This is a biggie, Julie. I'm going to try to condense this really into a very high level answer. So my kids, the first three came when they were ages 10 and the twins were 5. And then the last one came when he was 8.5 years old. And they came from Russia. If you have ever done any research on adoption, I grew up watching Annie. So I was like, the sun will come out tomorrow, maybe far away. It's the hard knock life. Oh, we are so happy to have Daddy Warbucks. Like good in the end. I didn't have the word trauma in my vocabulary, right? And so when you are adopting children with a disrupted attachment experience, attachment meaning to their caregiver, there's going to be trauma. And what I didn't know is how much trauma, especially my oldest and youngest had. I was so ill prepared because I thought love conquers everything, right? And I learned that trauma takes time. And I don't think I understood it until my kids were older, right? So I was just like, let's love them, tradition, church, like all these things will fix you. I will help fix you, that. And it just does not work like that. And so my children have taught me a lot of humility. They've taught me a lot about letting go of how I think something should look and to understand that life is messy and really for parenting, maybe more is just showing up for your kids. I think we have so much pressure, especially moms, but we put so much pressure on ourselves to do things perfectly, right? And we're messy. We have to be healing for our kids to have the best chances to heal. So it's actually giving yourself love and attention and time is so important for developing yourself because that will give your kids the best chance to be resilient. I think what my kids have taught me and the influence they've had on me, in addition to humility and teaching me about trauma and all the things is just like what unconditional love is. Sometimes I don't like them. I mean, I told you about my daughter. She rejected my lasagna. So, like, sometimes even as adults, my kids are not nice. And I think not just me, who's an adoptive mother, but like regular, moms who are biological moms could probably echo that sentiment sometimes. My kids went through a lot. My oldest kid got in trouble with the law when he was a teenager. And he was stupid, as teenage boys' brains are, and made a bad decision. And so he had to go to jail for about 4 months. I was freaking devastated. I'd never had an experience like this with anyone in my life before, and I was devastated. And I remember the first day I went to go visit him, it was this jail that he was in. It was like these long hallways that, like, I don't remember if they called him pods or whatever, but he was in pod D or something, pod 4, whatever it was. And it was like walking the length of a football field in this hugely lit up hallway. And I am bawling my eyes out, bawling my eyes out. How are we here? How did this happen? And there was a mom walking with me, and she just stopped and she put her arm around me and she's like, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And she walked the rest of the way to the pod with me, like her, with her arm like that. It was just such an act of humanity, just like you talked about a little earlier. Like, we need to sometimes say, here, get on my back. And that was her way of doing that for me in that moment. But it taught me so much humility. Like, so when people share with me now what their kids are going through, I'm a safe place for them because there's no judgment. It's just like, yep. I probably have been there with one of my kids. And so it really helped expand my level of empathy and understanding for people and that we're all here and it's messy and, just we need to do our best. We do need to do our best, but sometimes we're not going to. And sometimes even when we do, it's still messy just to have the empathy and kindness for people when that happens and ourselves.
I agree with that so much. I don't know why when you were talking, my pastor kept bing, bing, bing in my head because he just said like a couple Sundays ago, wherever people are, there's going to be problems. And he was like, so we need to get that idea out of our head that we're going to enter perfect situations when we're walking into spaces with other people, because that's never going to happen. And he talks a lot about mindset and accountability and stuff like that. And he was basically speaking about when we're entering into these situations with people, we already know that there's a potential for problems, but we need to equip ourselves with the mind of when we walk into these spaces, yeah, problems may be here, but I'm here too, and I'm going to be the solution. So it's like, yeah, I 100% feel like I've been showing up in the world in that way. Not perfect. I'm a hot mess too. Look, y'all want to hear some of my original Facebook lives? Go ahead, hot mess. But I love that you took on the responsibility of being a mother to children, especially at their ages. Because I just had a conversation with my friend who was adopted, and she was talking about if she ever had another kid, she would adopt. And I was like, would you adopt an older kid or a baby? And she was like, an older kid. And I was like, I feel like those are the children, like all children need love, but I feel like those are the children that are often overlooked. But like you said, those are the children that also have already experienced some things. That is something that I feel like we don't have all the time for, but I do want to say this because we were discussing it, that we should talk about more so that not so many parents that enter into these situations, and any parent can relate, but especially parents that are going to adopt, you can enter into this a little more prepared. Yes, come in with an open heart. And like you said, singing Annie and skipping down the sidewalk, bring all that energy into this situation. But also, let's give you the tools and the skills and the education so that you can successfully run through this. And I feel like that's very important. And I know, like during our pre-show, you were like, Julie, I think you got something here, girl. You do too, because you did all this trial and error. You do too. You have a space in that category where you can speak to people that want to adopt and they want to learn how to navigate those challenges in a healthy way and in a successful way so that their kids can thrive. You got something on you too, Stacey? Let me just put that out there.
Thank you. I receive. I receive. I receive it. Thank you, Julie.
You are so welcome. Okay, everyone. So before I ask the big show question, I do have one more question to ask you. And okay, what do you hope for readers to take away, especially everyone approaching you? I'm turning 20. Oh my God, I'm turning 30. I'm turning 40. I'm turning 50. I don't know when we stop celebrating. I'm going to do it until I'm up out of here. But you know, all the things. I just turned 90, girl. Wheel me in here. But what do you hope that they take away from Naked at 50?
Since when I started writing it and it was kind of coming into fruition, I have this affirmation journal that I write in every morning. And one of the things that is that my book will inspire millions. And I don't mean like book will inspire millions, like, isn't Stacey great? Not that kind of inspire. But people will feel this inspiration. Something will connect with them that they'll A, resolve something in the past, B, really set forward to go into the future in just a beautiful way. Or see, get inspired to do things outside their comfort zone and really live, really live. And so that's what I hope the takeaways are.
I hope you guys heard that. And you can actually rewind it a little bit and turn your speakers up so you can hear it again. So, Stacey, now I'm going to ask you the big show question. And that
Okay.
is, what does selective hearing mean to you?
Well, so many things, honestly. When I saw that question, I was like, Julie, I need some clarification because I can go so many different ways with that. But basically, short answer is I feel like it's how we choose to listen, how we choose to show up and listen to people, because, and maybe to dig deeper of the things that aren't being said.
I love that. So everybody, listen, because I feel like at the end of every show, I have to gather you together like a mother gathering her children that did not do their chores. So listen to me. Stacy is going to give you some information right now. That information will be found on my resource page and in the show details. So you're getting it three ways. So there's no excuse, okay? I'm not about excuses. There's no excuse for you not to reach out to Stacy and to take what your questions to her is. There's no excuse for you to not read the book. There's just no excuse, okay? So Stacy is going to tell you how you can connect with her for coaching opportunities and where you can get the book.
So you can connect with me on either my website, which is on the exhale, like you can listen to my podcast, which is Living on the Exhale, but only first if you listen to Julie's. And then you can also jump on. I have two Instagrams. I have a Living on the Exhale Instagram, and then I also have one directly for the book called Naked at 50. So you can jump, DM me, jump on one of those. And then my book, it became a bestseller on Amazon for 2 days and then it disappeared completely. And so we're working through the kinks with Amazon right now to figure out why that happened. It will be back before December 10th, which is the official release date. So right now it's in the pre-order. It is available to buy on Barnes and Noble right now, but who really shops on Barnes and Noble? Like, let's be real, 90% of books are sold on Amazon. So just keep checking Amazon, Naked at 50, and I hope it does something for you. I really do. And if it does, share it with me. I'd love to hear.
You hear that, everybody? Get in the comments, join the conversation. So, Stacey, thank you for being here with me today.
Such a joy, Julie. You're such a fun person to talk with. I'm still imagining you in the car with your son when he's like Romeo, Romoing,
Thank
Romoing, Romoing. The first graders. But thanks for sharing your story and your light and love with people, Julie. It's great.
you. And everyone, I will be back on Wednesday with a brand new solo. So until next time, this is Selective Hearing.